Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast presented by KFC. I'm your host, William Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada, and on this week's episode, I have Blake Murphy of The Athletic.
I thought you were introducing me as Extra Crispy, Blake Murphy.
If you want to, go ahead. I'm sure KFC would be loved, would be thrilled to have that plug.
The issue, though, as we're going to find out on January 19th, is that no buckets here.
Wow. I was going to say, yeah, that was something I was saving to the end, but we can just get to it now. Did you see that clip yesterday from the Kings-Warriors game?
Yes.
Where they missed like 8 layups in a row?
Where it's the version when the year we did the Raptors Republic tournament as a 5-on-5 instead of a 3-on-3, and the finals were played full court.
That doesn't sound good, man. The fitness is not there to play full court.
It's the only year my
game team
won.
Wait, actually?
Yeah. Wow. We did it cool that year. It was like way more expensive, but we got like group tickets to a game too. So we played on the Raptors practice facility and then like went as a group to a game.
Was that upstairs in Scotiabank?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No Dunks put a team in, formerly the starters. Yeah, at that time, they may even have been Basketball Jones still.
Basketball Jones forever.
Knocked them off in the semis. What? No big deal.
Wow. No game winner. No buzzer-beating game winner from Lee Ellis.
No, not that time.
Like in the finals.
All of those guys are significantly better than me, though.
Yeah, who's on your team this year?
Me and Tass can hang. But
really?
Tass plays similarly to me.
Okay. He's
just a lot of hustle. Smart plays.
That's most of the bloggers.
Yeah.
Who's on your team this year?
This year?
Yeah.
My roommate, Steve.
Okay. He's not just your roommate. He's also quite popular.
Yeah.
Is he playing at Coachella?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah, the guitarist for Pup.
Yeah.
Steve Sladkowski is on my team. A guy named Jeremy Shaolin Ryu, who directs all their music videos.
Okay.
He's a smaller guy. Reynolds has played with him before. Apparently, he's quite good.
Okay.
I've played with him. And then my boy, Trev, who plays on my team every year. The big 6'5" ball handler guy who his back is in too poor condition to rebound, which is great because I get to play center.
Noted. Well, let's sneak in one of those Kyle Lowry moments.
Oh, yeah. I'm drawing a charge. If you and I come face-to-face, I'm definitely drawing a charge.
Oh, man. We're both flopping at the same time, like Chris Paul and who was it, DeMarcus Cousins or whoever?
Yeah. It's going to be like, this is a reference you won't get, but in old wrestling video games, if both people press the run button at the same time, they'd run into each other and just like flop backwards and stare each other down. It's exactly what it's going to look like.
All right. Well,
I don't think we can play each other till the second round, though, the way I have the bracket set up.
All right.
Because there's two blogger divisions this year.
That's fair. I would also want to avoid Assad and, you know, just a
couple else on your team?
Sahal's on the team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're not really sure if Sahal's going to be good.
He can at least do the sideline commentary in his Stephen A. voice.
Yeah, he's just going to fucking roast everybody on the sideline. And then
he's just there to film Assad in case Assad gets the one highlight he got on me over the course of 5 tournaments and never stops talking
okay.
about
it. All right. I was there. It was more than one highlight.
I didn't guard him. It was a pick-and-pop three. It was a clutch bucket.
It's a couple of buckets. Nah. Yeah, I mean, he really scored all our fucking points in that series.
Yeah, I didn't guard him that much. I mostly guarded you.
Yeah. What's the point? Our talents are wasted on each other.
Yeah.
Both keeping ourselves to zero.
Yeah. I'm just trying to draw all those fouls on you so I can get breathers at that point in the day.
Jeez. Well,
I'm sorry. I know you were about to transition to real talk, but I get in at like 5 in the morning the night before that tournament that starts at 9 a.m.
So you're really PJ Tucker.
Yeah.
You're really the white PJ Tucker.
No sleep. I'm going to try to sleep on that bus, but I can't usually sleep on buses and planes, so.
Wow.
Coming off that trip, I don't know. Maybe I'll pick something up on the trip, though.
Yeah, well, maybe there you go.
Maybe Charles Kissy can get my jumper going.
Wow. What a plug for Charles Kissy. Wow.
He was talking a lot of smack to Stanley Johnson in the pregame warm-ups last night.
What was he saying?
He was like, Stanley was doing the drill where you come in semi-transition, you have to either pull up or drive, and Kissy is like in his grill screaming, "Against the best defender alive! Against the best defender alive!"
He's 905 Jamal McGlure?
I guess. I mean, it looks like Joel Anthony's going to be 905 Jamal McGlure. He's at every game.
Yeah, that's
Get
true.
Get him a jersey, man. They could use the center depth.
Wow.
You saw the game last night, your first of the year?
I did, yeah. We're going to talk about the 905. You know what? Let's just talk about the 905. We have a couple of things we can talk about. Which, by the way, if you missed it earlier, the context is that me and Blake are both playing in the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament that's happening at the Mattamy Athletic Center Arena. Yeah, which is, you know, at Ryerson on January 19th. I mean, I don't know what's the point of saying this. It's not like people can come in and watch.
I mean, they probably could. You could just walk off the street and poke your head in, but it's not very good basketball.
It's not very good basketball. At least the two of us. There's a couple of decent guys.
The team that has won 3 of the 6 years we've done it didn't enter this year. So it's wide open.
Wow.
And like I said, we have 18. We have 2 full divisions of blogger or like friends of blogger teams.
Yeah.
So one whole, I've set it up as Eastern and Western Conference. So like the championship will be like the blogger champion against like the reader champion.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Wow. Yeah. It's really East versus West.
Yeah. But it's East versus West from like a couple years ago because there aren't 6 good teams in the blogger conference.
I was going to say, yeah. Yahoo put in a team that I was not a part of.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see. Anyway. The 905 game, so we can start there. So the Raptors are getting, finally, a couple of guys back healthy. We could talk about the fact that Fred is apparently now out, at least for tonight's game, which we're recording before the Raptors play the Blazers. Matt Thomas, Malcolm Miller, and Stanley Johnson go down to the 905, and they played Monday, and they played the Erie BayHawks. They
were pretty good. Yeah.
They look pretty good, honestly.
Josh Gray's really good. New Orleans two-way point guard.
Yeah. I mean, their three-point shooting looked pretty solid, but the Raptors made a big comeback. I mean, it's basically a Raptor game. Like, that was actually pretty much the Nets game.
Nobody could shoot in the first quarter. Matt Thomas and Stanley Johnson looked like two guys who hadn't played real minutes in 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and then they figured it out.
Yeah.
That was good.
You were down there. There's a heavy Raptor presence, not just 905, but also a lot of members from the big club.
Yeah, so it was Fred VanVleet bobblehead night, which I talked to him about a little bit before the game, and it was kind of weird for him because like he's had bobbleheads before, like back in Wichita and stuff like that, and obviously the championship bobbleheads, but this one, like honoring him, even though he's only a 4-year player, he said it like seems like he's retired or something. But he was like super positive. There have been times over the years where like Pascal, Fred, and Norm bristle a little bit about like being asked about the 905. I think like when you're fresh from it, you want to put it behind you and you don't want that to be a part of your narrative necessarily. But they all seem to really have embraced how much their stories are influencing other players. Like Terrence Davis on draft night saying, no, I watched the Fred VanVleet video. I can do that. I'm going to bet on myself. Or even like Stanley Johnson, who requested to go down there. And when he signed in July, he was like, well, the Raptors player development staff, like everyone who comes in ends up better than where they came in. And like, there are some counters to that of guys who weren't better off after they left. But for the most part, guys have turned that into success. And Fred and Pascal are kind of the avatars for that. So it was cool to honor that. And then Pascal was out. Norm was out. Nick Nurse, most of the coaching staff, Terrence Davis and DeJuan Hernandez.
Yeah.
All sorts of guys were out.
No, it's great. It's great. I mean, this is one of the benefits of having the G League team so close is that you can have this like really close integration. Like, we get told at practice on Monday, hey, Matt Thomas is coming back. He's going to play the 905 tonight. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, actually, it turns out 2 more guys are going to join him. Obviously, different cases. Matt is trying to get some rust off. Stanley is also kind of trying to get some rust off, but yeah, I also felt like he wanted to get some run.
He did, but I think there was definitely an element of like those 6 to 8 weeks where he was out with a stress reaction in his groin.
Yeah.
That's such a touchy injury that like I think most of the work he did during that time was just like band work and like strengthening the muscles.
Yeah.
I don't think he got to play much ball at all, and like when he left the arena like 20 minutes after the game, he was still drenched. So I think getting 35 minutes in is pretty healthy for these guys sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Malcolm Miller, I don't really know. Apparently he asked to go down, like all 3 of them asked to go down.
Yeah,
but he doesn't have a choice anyway, and
fair enough.
When the team gets healthy, he might see some time down there anyway. If he's on the roster.
So Matt Thomas and Stanley Johnson. I will start with Matt Thomas. I thought he had the better game between the two of the guys. Actually, if you look at it, Stanley, even though he shot like 2 of 12, I think, in the first half, he really turned it around.
6 of 12 in the second half and like some clutch free throws. Big dunk late. Came up with a steal and a dunk on like a clutch possession. The intensity level is what I appreciated most from him. Like,
exactly.
Like, he's not a great shooter, and he does have a little bit of that like, oh, I dropped 84 in an OVO game. I'm going to come down to the G League and drop 40. But like, once he figured it out and got his feet underneath him, I thought a lot more of that came in the flow of the offense. And
I
mean, you mentioned it on the elevator up here. His athleticism just stands out so much at that level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, O'Shea looked like freaking LeBron out there. And he might have stole the show. I mean, definitely different Nick Nurse.
Yeah, he probably looked the best of the all four Raptors that were down there. He had two huge putbacks down the stretch, hit a big corner three that he got fouled on. He didn't convert the and one, but that's like...
Tough shot.
That's seven huge points down the stretch of a very close game. And he's actually been... He's been a weird case where he has a little bit of Malcolm Miller 2 years ago in him, where he's looked much better with the Raptors than he's looked with the 905.
Huh.
The 905, he's come off the bench a little bit.
Right.
You know, his defense is like here and there, and he's still, because he's still just a play finisher on offense, when he's asked to do more with the 905, it's not there. The percentages aren't there. Mm. And then you get him in the Raptors, and his role's simplified, and it's just go get a rebound and run in transition. He looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I should really think he stole the show. There was one clip where O'Shea comes in for this massive two-handed dunk, kind of out of nowhere, and the camera pans over to Nick Nurse, and he's, like, flipping over his chair, basically. He was that excited. It was a great sight to see. I mean, Matt Thomas, I just thought, like, he, more than anyone else, it was surprising because with a shooter, it's harder to come in. Obviously, there's no practice, and they're not familiar with the team. Probably doesn't even know most of the guys outside of training camps.
Yeah, like
that.
And, like, they run some of the same stuff for Matt Morgan that the NBA team runs for Matt Thomas because they're similar off-ball players. But really, you're getting dropped in with a point guard who doesn't know you.
Yeah. And he was, I thought he did a pretty good job of looking for his own offense, you know, occasionally handling the ball here and there, just creating. And I thought Matt looked pretty sharp.
Yeah, four assists, and I think three of them were attacking a closeout and making the next pass.
Yeah.
And the other one was just a transition hit ahead on a three he could have took. And also had 10 rebounds, which he had.
Sure,
he was very surprised after the game when he was told he had 10 rebounds. Which is, it was pretty funny. But yeah, he looked good, man. And obviously, he was 2 of 8 on threes, I think.
Yeah.
That'll come.
He missed, like, this first couple.
Yeah, there was a quote that I used in my story on Matt Thomas's return last night at The Athletic that 905 GM Chad Sanders said to me, basically, if Matt Thomas comes down here and shoots 0 of 10 for the 905 and then hits shots for the Raptors, well, then that's absolutely worth it.
Yeah,
of course. So it doesn't really matter that he hit 2 of 8.
No, but I generally like the flow of it. I thought, in terms of his fitness and stuff like that, for a guy who hadn't played in 6 weeks, looked really good. And that's actually not that surprising, because whenever you saw my practice stuff like that, he was, even though he was hurt, because the injury was on his non-shooting hand and it was a fracture on the finger, he was able to do most of everything to just keep up his fitness.
As I mistakenly tweeted at one point, he was doing rigorous one-handed workouts. Oops, phrasing.
Oh, man.
Phrasing.
That's tough.
But it's true. Like, I don't think he was catching passes at full force, like when someone kicked the ball out, and he obviously couldn't take contact, but so much of what his game is predicated on, he can at least, you know, replicate in a practice setting. Obviously, the speed of the NBA will probably be the biggest difference tonight when he's back out there. But luckily, you know, Portland's maybe not the most stout defense anyway, so.
Yeah, there you go. So he's going to play in tonight's game, if you're listening somehow before the game starts. Stanley Johnson, we talked about it a little bit. I mean, he came out looking for his own shot, looked pretty much out of rhythm. It wasn't so much he was rusty as, like, he was just kind of, he's like, oh, there's 10 seconds left. I have the ball on the perimeter. I'm going to shoot this three. And it's like, I don't know. It's not his strength as a basketball player.
Yeah, there were a couple, I don't know if you remember in the Miami game when he got minutes, Kyle found him for like a semi-open corner three, and he hesitated and then jab-stepped for a contested three.
Yeah.
And that's what a couple of his plays in the 905 game reminded me of. Like, it's okay that you take those shots, but you got to take them right away.
Yeah.
If you take that shot and it's a bad shot, well, better it be a bad shot against a scramble defense than letting the defense reset and then 100%. Having to chuck it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was very erratic from in the first half. I don't know who was watching the game, so there wasn't a lot of commentary. But for me personally, I was like, this is unfortunate for him, because I thought it was actually a good job by him to volunteer to go down there, get some run. And then for him to, like, struggle that badly, it was just unfortunate. But then I was really happy for him, because in the second half, he really turned it around. His athleticism really popped. Really just, like, getting offensive rebounds, stuff like that. And it's just stuff that, if he could do that at the big league level, and not even just, like, if he could be O'Shea Brissett, because they already have O'Shea Brissett, and they have Rondé, and they have a lot of hustle guys, really. But, if he can kind of just come back to that core of just, like, if he can be a defender, if he can use his athleticism in a productive way, if he can hit an occasional shot, and maybe get to the rim, because he does have a nice handle a little bit.
Yeah, he has a better driving game than O'Shea or Rondé, I don't know that you'd ever need that from that role, but, like, the bench unit can always use a little bit of that if it comes into the flow.
Yeah.
Like, they missed that from Norm right now.
Yeah.
Although Norm, if he returns and Fred's still out, he's probably back to the starting lineup anyway. But
I was going to say, yeah.
Man.
I've already picked up Norm on my fantasy team.
There you go.
My team needs him. My team is upgraded banged up like the Raptors. Upgraded to doubtful. That's one way to put it. So, you know, overall, it was good to see just a lot of people out there. You know, it was honestly good to see just a lot of people on the stream. Like, first off, people don't know. A lot of people might not know this. You could just watch the G League games, like, online. You just click the box score, watch it.
GLeague.com or Twitch or all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good experience. Commentary, I enjoyed.
Yeah, Gareth and Amy are good.
Yeah.
Akil was in full Akil mode. That's great.
There was a lot of things to report on the sidelines. Yeah. So, yeah.
Akil loves those games.
I'm sure he does.
He's good at it.
Made fun of Fred a little bit about the hairline on his bobblehead, but...
Yeah, Fred was also not happy that his bobblehead looks a little gray.
He looked a little Asian. I don't know.
I thought he looked like Corey Joseph with a black eye.
Well, I mean, you think there's any chance they just recycled the Corey Joseph default? Yeah.
Every time the Raptors do a bobblehead that isn't a great one, it reminds me of the Jose Calderon one where there was the commercial where he's like, is this supposed to look like me?
No, there's some all-time bad bobblehead, sports bobbleheads. Just look those up. There's a lot of them. Even the championship ones. Like, they made Kawhi look like R. Kelly from 2005, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that sucks.
Anyway, so the Raptors, they have a lot of injuries right now. So the latest development being Fred VanVleet picking up a small sort of injury at the end of the Nets game. I've seen a lot of reaction of, like, people being upset that Nick Nurse is playing their guys too much. How much of it is on Nick Nurse, if I had to ask you?
I mean, I don't know. You know I'm pretty conservative when it comes to minutes load. And, like, yeah, they were up 10 with 4 minutes to go. But given how they'd played this week, I understand that he wasn't comfortable up 10 with 4 minutes left.
Right.
It's tough, man, because I don't know what the answer. Like, I don't know if you can tell a coach, and I don't know if you can tell Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet in a five-point game in the second half, no, you can't go back in. Like, we got to keep you at X number of minutes. And, like, minutes are one of the only things we have to measure, right? Like, we don't know if Fred and Kyle are getting days off. And
can't really test their, like, load.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now, I think that sometimes that's maybe used as, not an excuse, but, like, as a cover for not providing information about what's actually going on.
Sure.
Obviously, Kyle is a guy who's broke down late in seasons in the past. Nick Nurse has said as much that they like him in the 32 to 34 range in terms of him being ready in April. Fred... I don't know if there's been a time where Fred hasn't had some sort of injury during his career. He wears, like, this Iron Man thing around his waist now before games to loosen up his back. And I'm sure
he's really Kyle Lowry.
Yeah. I'm sure his back is related to his hamstring.
Sure. Yeah.
All those things are. And he's got a jammed finger.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that you can put that much. Like, if they were getting these kind of minutes with a fully healthy roster and a third point guard on the team, then, like, I would be more critical of it. Right. And I don't love it. But I understand. Like, game to game, there have been very few instances where I'm like, oh, these guys got to get off the floor.
Right.
So it's tough. He's not in an easy position. Well, right? unless you just, like, make a rotation before the game, like in 2K, and just stick to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right?
Which isn't that realistic.
This was the closest one where I'm like, maybe he could have gotten him out of the game. But also, it was, like, such an innocuous play. It seemed like what aggravated it might have been Joe Harris was, like, there in transition, and then Fred was just trying to, like, get around him so he can throw the hit ahead pass, and he ended up doing that. But it's like one of those plays that, like, that could happen at any point in the game. And it was just unfortunate that happened towards the end. I sympathize with Nurse because, like what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? This is, like, just a comically bad year in terms of injuries. It's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, and, like, they're up 10 against the Nets, and it had been a good comeback. But, like, with 4 minutes left, if you take Kyle and Fred out and Serge,
yeah,
like, Patrick McCaw and Terrence Davis are your two guards.
Yep.
Are you certain that you can hold on to a 10-point lead?
No.
Over 4 minutes?
And it would be really deflating because they had made a great comeback to come back into that game. They were in control. Kyle was in the mood to, like, just pretty much.
Kyle was spicy.
I've read somewhere online, they were talking about how, oh, don't poke the bear. It felt very much like Kyle poked himself.
Yeah.
The bear poked himself. Because he put Jared Allen in a freaking arm bar.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you guys hate me now? Well, fine. I'll go beat your team.
He's such an interesting guy.
Yeah. Fred, I mean, so he's out for tonight against Portland. I mean,
I would assume he misses both sides of the back-to-back. They have 3 days off coming up after that.
Right.
I don't know why you'd push it, even if, you know, it's Portland and Charlotte. They're not. Charlotte's a back-to-back on the road. It's not a gimme, but, like, it's just not worth it if it's not 100%. And
yeah,
I don't know. I would be surprised if he plays before Sunday.
Norm?
Doubtful? I don't know. He's another guy. I would be a little surprised if he plays before Sunday.
Yeah.
Just because like they have 3 days off, and not only is that three more days to recover, this is their first window to have consecutive practice days in a really long time.
Right.
So if you're trying to get Norm up to speed, but I don't know, maybe the Fred injury changes their thinking and Norm's ready to go. It did look like he did more than he had been at practice on Monday, the little part that we got to see.
Right. Yeah, it was nice to see, because, like, I mean, first off, the Raptors hadn't had a practice since, I guess, December 26th, I think, maybe, or 27th. There was one right before this. They went to Boston.
Right.
That one I missed. I was with family. But were you at that one?
No.
You weren't that one. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, they just haven't had a lot of practices. December was an extremely busy month for them. They finally have some time off in the schedule, so it'd be nice. But yesterday, we got at least to see Pascal out there doing some light shooting.
We know Mark is still alive.
Mark is still alive. He was walking around quite briskly, I gotta say. Maybe a little bit faster than he moves in the game. I don't want him to pull another hamstring walking. But, you know, they're around, so that's nice to see. And obviously, Pascal was at the 905 game last night.
DeJuan Hernandez was out of his walking boot at the 905 game.
Nice. Honestly, it's all hands on deck.
Yeah, I mean, like that sounds like I'm not being serious, but he would have played over the last couple weeks.
Yeah. So, the only concern I really have is Kyle's playing. He's especially with the injuries to some of these other guys. He's really had to step up. I mean, like, if you look at some of the wins here, that Mavericks comeback, obviously it was a lot to do with Kyle Lowry. It was one of the finest quarters he's ever played in his career. You look at even the Indiana game right after that. Kyle was phenomenal in that Indiana game. They really should have just straight up lost that game in regulation. Then Kyle really turns it on. And honestly, he has a chance to put that game away at the end of the game there. But he was phenomenal in that one. You look at that Celtics game, the one that was the revenge win. He was great in that one. And most of these games here, I mean, they basically have needed Kyle to be phenomenal over the stretch, not only just to like hold the fort down, but just to win games, because they haven't had these guys. And, you know, it's a bit concerning, because you have Kyle 43 minutes against the Nets. It scares you. And always when you watch Kyle, there's always the question of like, how sustainable is it for Kyle to be doing this?
Yeah.
And
I feel like we've been asking it for his entire career. And the answer is usually he can, but there are instances where he didn't.
Yeah. And that's what I'm afraid of right now. But, I mean, again, it's also a weird conversation to have, because, like, what else are you going to do? Otherwise, you're just going to punt these games.
Yeah. I also do wonder how much, because the Washington series 2 years into the run was so epically bad and his back was in such rough shape then, if that just, like, has an outsized impact on our perception. Because, like, the only other time he's really missed a lot of time was hand stuff, and that's freak stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the wrist thing, he probably shouldn't have played All-Star Weekend and golfed.
Well,
but
that was always very weird that happened.
Yeah, like a couple of his things have been random, not like overuse injuries. And he's really, like, I can't remember him having like a groin or a hamstring or a quad or anything like that.
Yeah. He's had, like, a lot of hands.
And like that Washington year was pre-Fit Lowry. That was
maybe
skinny
the back
Kyle
end,
summer.
Maybe the back has something to do with that.
Yeah.
Although that was the year he told the story of him and DeMar walking through a McDonald's
McFlurries,
late at night,
baby.
Getting McFlurries, yeah.
I wonder if it was that one right there. Queen and Spadina.
I really hope it wasn't.
No, I'm sure it was somewhere like in Etobicoke or something. I don't know where these guys live, but I can't imagine it was Queen and Spadina. The worst McDonald's in the city, probably.
Oh, my God. It's especially now that they've shut down King and Dufferin.
They shut that down?
Yeah.
Damn.
They should have, though.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, seriously, though. Rest in peace. It is an iconic spot. Yeah, I mean, that's the only concern I have, but I mean, again, it's...
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do, man?
Like, tonight, Fred's out. Like, yeah. Kyle's going to play 40 minutes, probably.
Yep.
And I don't know what the answer is, because if he plays, like, 32 or 34, they're probably going to lose.
Yeah.
So, I know that the wins and losses don't really matter in the big picture, but, like, the 2-6 in the East is so tight, and, like, the 2-seed could have a lot of value, home court could have a lot of value.
Kyle
and then
wants
again,
to get to the All-Star game.
And then, it's back to the point of, like, how do you not try to do everything to win a game once you're in the game?
Yeah.
It's tough. But he's probably going to play 40 minutes tonight. He's probably going to play, like, 75 in this back-to-back.
And we're going to be thrilled when he wins.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, hold our breath during the whole thing. Shifting topics here. It's kind of the start of trade season because we're getting rumors and stuff like that. A lot of players... compared to last season, this year's trade market seems a little bit more active. There's a couple more guys being mentioned. We can just run through some of these guys here.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do feel like there's more buzz than last year, mm-hmm. but like I don't know that there's going to be as much get done. Just like so much is going to depend on each conference. Like the East is a 6-team conference,
yep.
and the West is a 7-team conference. But I don't know how much those teams on the fringe are going to push to sell. Like does Orlando sell with Jonathan Isaac out? Detroit's going to sell, but they don't really have anything other than Drummond. Like Memphis is right there.
Yeah. And they just had a great win against they had a great win against Phoenix? Not just the Clippers, but also Phoenix.
Yeah.
JV had an incredible game that
Yeah, week. He had 3 threes in the first quarter, I think.
It was nuts. He had like a 30-point game with like double-digit rebounds, like 5 assists, like 3 steals, like 2 blocks, and a bunch of threes. I know this intimately because I just lost that fantasy week to JV, which, you know, I probably deserved it, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, so trade season. Drummond is there was a report from Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports that said that in addition to Atlanta, which was the first team that was linked to Drummond, but the Raptors, the Mavericks, and I think one more team, maybe the Celtics. Yeah. Yeah, well, we know the Celtics aren't going to make a trade, but yeah, those three teams are also apparently linked to Drummond. To me, I found that a little surprising that the Raptors are on there. He mentioned that Lowry and Drummond are close, which I had never seen that.
Even if they are. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
What are your thoughts on Drummond in general?
I like Drummond as a player. I think mm-hmm. when like that tweet came out, the reaction went a little too far the other way to like, we don't want Drummond and that's yeah. not a big enough upgrade and stuff. Like,
he's a good player.
Drummond is the best rebounder in basketball. And if you're looking ahead to potential playoff series, I understand why teams who might run into Joel Embiid would check in on him.
Right.
I don't think the Raptors, like I can't see any scenario where Marc Gasol and an asset or Serge Ibaka and an asset for Drummond makes sense. Yep. For the Raptors, like he's a free agent and you're not going to want to have to pay him 25, mm-hmm. 30 million and eat into your 2021 cap space. I don't think it's a meaningful enough upgrade for the rest of the season to attach like a real asset to it.
Yep.
I mean, if it only costs you a second, I guess, sure. But the Pistons shouldn't be doing that.
No.
So, I don't know. It's like I would actually... It's weird. Drummond seems to me to be both underrated and overrated, where like people, yeah. some people look at the stat line and it's like, okay, he's got a little bit of like big man DeMar to him where yeah. there's a lot of stats and historically he doesn't drive winning a ton.
He's like a center Westbrook.
But also like rebounding is really important.
Yeah.
Maybe not at the individual level as much, but at the team level it is. And you can, mm-hmm. you know, with as aggressive as some of the East teams like to be around the perimeter,
yeah.
you know, having a guy back there who can kind of man the fort even against an Embiid type on the glass yeah. makes sense to me. I just don't think it'll be the Raptors. I think we also run into this time of year because the Raptors leak so infrequently
yeah, yeah.
and because it's so obvious when the Raptors are leaking
right.
that like teams will just throw the Raptors into scenarios.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This does not seem like a rumor that came from the Raptors. Not that many rumors, like to your point, come from the Raptors. This seems like one of those like leverage plays. Are like, hey, it's not going to be free for Atlanta. There's all these other teams I want to get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, look, Goodwill's embedded in Detroit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It probably came from the Detroit side.
Probably.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's their, they have the right to float things like the Lakers and Kings have. And,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't put a ton of juice to it.
Let's briefly entertain the Drummond thing. We can talk about maybe the positives and negatives of what something like this could have on the Raptors. Again, I think it's very unlikely as well. To your point, I think the positives with Drummond, I think, are a little bit obvious. I think the rebounding point, I mean, he's led the league in rebounds 3 of the last 4 years. Or 4 of the last 5 years, sorry, in the last 3 years in consecutively. He's not just, like, defensive rebounding, which I think is probably a little bit overrated nowadays, but, like, offensive rebounding. He's a real threat. And also, I think as a dive man, Raptors just don't have a lot of it right now. Like,
right.
Boucher's
like
Boucher, in
there. Yeah.
But Boucher is, like, so skinny.
Serge is a short roll guy, and yeah. Mark's a pop guy.
Mark's a pass the ball back to the guard guy.
Yeah. I get that. I would say, to your point about defensive rebounding, I know it's maybe a little overrated, but I think the fact that Drummond has spent the bulk of his time leading the league in rebounds in a dropback scheme.
Yeah.
Is like maybe helpful to a team that already employs a dropback scheme. Like,
that's true.
He's like, that's one of the Raptors' biggest weaknesses with their dropback right now. Even though the dropback is supposed to be designed to help you on the glass a little bit,
yeah.
You know, they're still well below average defensive rebounding team. So,
yeah.
It does paper over that strength. I don't know. Like, you can't tell me an asset that's more than a second round pick,
yeah.
that you would attach to Ibaka, and I would be like, oh yeah, that makes sense for Drummond.
I agree.
And but, I don't think Gasol would make sense.
No, I don't think Gasol would make sense. I actually think even to the point of like wanting a guy to match up with Embiid. Mm-hmm. Embiid and Drummond have had a long-standing feud, and Drummond has been on the losing side of that.
Yeah. Now, I do wonder if Masai could work that magic of, hey, remember when I said Jonas is better than you?
Yeah.
Well, now I believe you could be better than Embiid. I don't know. Maybe a new situation would give him some confidence. Yeah. But I do think Drummond's one of the more interesting names in terms of how it could like disrupt the league's pecking order. Like,
Yeah, sure.
I don't really see a deal that makes sense with the contracts and stuff for Boston. Like, they probably have to send Hayward out or multiple pieces.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to do either of those things, but right. Like he'd be an interesting fit there.
He would be interesting in that team for sure, especially because one of the things that I think has improved with Drummond, he's always had pretty good hands, but this year it's on another level. I mean, he's averaging 2 steals a game, 1.9 blocks per game. He's one of the league leaders in deflections.
If has not, free throw percentage gone back down though after that like 1 year spike that he had?
He's at 63% this year, which is surprising. Okay. It's actually a career high.
Okay,
he's improved from a 30% free throw shooter. That's not even slander. That's just straight up what he was at, 30s, to a 60% free throw shooter 3 years ago, 59 last year, and now this year 63. Okay. So like bad, but like acceptably bad.
Yeah. Hey, you're probably not hacking him at a 1.25 expected points.
Yeah.
Maybe you are.
Well, maybe. Well, we'll see. I think it's a situational one.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think defensively, it's just he's also not as good as like the numbers say. Like when you look at it, You're almost at 4 combined steals and blocks, and he's leading the league in rebound. You're like, holy crap, he's a defensive monster.
Yeah.
He's not. Not at all.
No.
And he kind of pouts like, a little bit, too.
Not to over-defend him or like over-project what he'd look like somewhere else, the fact that he's gotten dramatically better over the years, maybe dramatically is an overstatement, but the fact that he's gotten noticeably better over the years while in just a bad situation in Detroit, like maybe he could impact a good team a little differently,
sure.
But also maybe it's just he's learned how to fill those stats and...
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean...
Poor Blake Griffin, man.
He's had season-ending surgery now. Well, I mean, I guess it's not official that it's season-ending, but, I mean, come on. Arthroscopic knee surgery, and it's tough. Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate. I mean, the Pistons as a whole, it's just really depressing, man.
I guess the one thing that gets interesting is, like, and the Pistons absolutely shouldn't do this, but, like, if they're willing to eat money in a deal, then maybe it gets more interesting for some teams. Like, maybe it opens up their market.
Sure.
But I don't think that makes a lot of sense for them. Yeah. Starting a rebuild.
Yeah, I'm kind of good with the Raptors passing on Drummond, to be honest.
Yeah,
I don't think it makes that much sense. A couple other names on the market. Kevin Love.
He makes more than $30 million, I think close to $40 million in the summer of 2021. It's not...
Yeah.
I can't imagine how that would work out. You'd be punting on that entire free agent class. And I know that, like...
Love is pretty good. I mean...
He is pretty good.
But
if you thought it made you a title contender, then... You could find your way to it because you can always trade him again after or, you know, find other ways to make cap space. Or if you, you know, miss out on 2021 free agency, but it got you a title, then cool. I just don't know that's a lot of money left on that deal.
Oh, yeah. And he's an injury-prone player.
And he just, like, hasn't tried for a couple of months.
The videos of him showing contempt at work is phenomenal.
It's hilarious.
It really is phenomenal. I really admire him for doing it. It's on such a public stage.
Yeah. Neither of us have ever witnessed that at a workplace.
Yeah. We can make jokes about this afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't think Love makes a lot of sense. Another guy in Cleveland, Tristan Thompson.
I mean, it's similar to Drummond. I think Thompson's a much better, like, legitimate defender.
Yeah, I think so, too. We've also seen Tristan do it at a really high level in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's more switchable. He's rangier. He's nearly as good a rebounder.
Yeah.
And, like, you can mix up the coverages and stuff. I think if the Raptors were to get him, they would probably feel comfortable experimenting with those big lineups with him playing more power forward defensively. Like I think they would. But again, we're back to what asset do you attach to Ibaka or whoever that this makes sense?
Right.
It's like, are you giving up a first for that upgrade?
Because I think Cleveland should expect a first in return
for
Tristan. Yeah,
like he's probably the best.
Make perfect sense for Boston.
Yeah, he's probably the best big on a good deal that'll hit the market.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I guess the issue with Boston this year is they just don't have a lot of tradable contracts.
It's Hayward. And basically Hayward getting good again.
Yeah.
That was the one thing. Like, even when we looked at scenarios in the summer, if the Raptors were to blow it up, I was like, well, okay, well, Boston might have a need for Gasol.
Yeah.
Maybe if they attach an asset to Hayward.
Yeah.
Well, now there's no way they would do that. Like, Hayward's back to contributing.
Yeah.
When he's not gaming.
Also, fuck the Celtics.
Yeah.
Not getting Gasol.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Tristan, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would... if they were thinking of getting Drummond, I'd rather them try to get Tristan, to be honest. It's just like a lower number. It makes a little bit more sense. And I think, honestly, it's just you can get most of the benefits of Andre Drummond. I think Tristan actually even has better touch around the rim than Drummond, yep. Which, yeah, none of them have great touch, I got to say.
Plus, there's the local angle, which doesn't
sure.
hurt.
Sure, yeah. Although Tristan, yeah, I mean, he's talked a lot of trash about Toronto, let's be sure. real. But, I mean, everyone from that Cavs team has. They have, honestly, the Cavs have absolute right to talk trash about the Raptors. Yeah, they're going through them, you know, right now, as we speak. Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Yeah, I love Bogdanovic.
Yeah.
I would attach a first-round pick to Norman Powell to get him.
That would be phenomenal.
I don't know, man. It's hard to make heads or tails of this Kuzma stuff. I'm not a big Kuzma fan.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard for me to judge whether, like, how Sacramento would judge certain offers if they really like Kuzma, because, like, that's not it for me. I'm not a big Kuzma guy.
That did not make a lot of sense for me.
Yeah.
Especially when that first report came out, where it seemed very much from the Lakers side of, like, oh, they're going to give us Bogdanovic as a starting point and more. And then later on, it was another report came in and was like, no. It will mostly kind of be straight up one for one, or at least it will not be significantly more. Yeah. But Bogdanovic being on the market is not surprising, I guess, because the Kings this year, I think they've been a little bit under expectations. Last year, they were really in the playoff chase until the end, and they kind of faded.
He's also an RFA who a lot of people seem to think is like cool with going back to Europe if he doesn't get a good deal in the NBA. Because like, he took a long time to come to the NBA in the first place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've seen a couple of people speculate that like maybe that's why he has less of a market. Because
right.
You're not just negotiating against the NBA, you're negotiating against European teams. Who was it that did that last year? Someone went over there, surprisingly.
Miritich,
right.
Yeah, he went to Barcelona for, I think, like eight figures, which is surprising. That hasn't really happened that much. There's money in Europe, but it's not like that much money.
Yeah, I mean, Nando De Colo's been making 5-6 mil for a long time.
Still restricted, baby.
Yep.
One of my favorite things about your Twitter account is once a year we'll see the Raptors have picked up the rights of Nando De Colo.
Yeah, extend him a qualifying offer.
Yep, there you go. But yeah, Bogdanovic, I mean, it's interesting. Bogdanovic is a really nice piece. And like, I guess it really depends on whether you're going to be willing to sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah.
Because he is a restricted free agent. But
does it, if you're the Raptors case, and that, like, Norm's had a really good season.
Yeah.
And I like Norm.
Yep.
But that player option in 2021 looms, and that's something that this summer we were looking at as probably a negative asset.
Okay.
He's probably played his way to that being a neutral asset now.
Yeah,
to where maybe you wouldn't need to attach a draft pick to unload him.
Yeah.
But is a first-round pick enough for that upgrade plus you get out of Norm's 2021 season? Like, maybe?
Maybe. It's kind of preemptive, I think.
Yeah, it's that move would surprise. It's not a very Masai move,
right?
I don't think, but...
But Bogdanovic is nice as a player. I talked about him before the season. He would be a great fit.
They could really use another guy who can put the ball on the floor and get a bucket. And
he's an elite shooter. Like, especially, not even just like percentages. Like, he's only at 38%, which is pretty good, but it's not like elite. But like, when
you also get better, easier looks in Toronto, probably.
Yeah. No, and he's like, as a guy with a wide open look, Bogdanovic is freaking money on that. You can create a little bit. Clearly willing to come off the bench. If you're willing to come off the bench in Sacramento, you're probably willing to come off the bench in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, also, he might be a fit with the starting lineup if Norm were the outbound piece, and then that lets you move Fred to the bench or whatever. But like, I don't know. You'd have some options there.
He's got good size, too.
Yeah.
And maybe you have a little bit better leverage with Fred in free agency a little bit. Probably not. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Bogdanovic would be nice, man. And plus, there's a huge Serbian population here in Toronto, so I'm sure they'd really support him.
The only, I don't know if you have that name on your list, but the only other one like Bogdanovic that I've thought about is John Hollinger threw out Evan Fournier for the Powell in a first package. Okay. And like, Orlando's probably going to be more open to selling now that Isaac's going to miss so much time. I like Fournier.
Yeah.
I don't know if Norm's played his way past that deal or what.
Yeah, there's something about Fournier where it's not as sexy as a guy like Bogdanovic, even just because it doesn't feel like Bogdanovic. It doesn't feel like Fournier has the kind of upside that Bogdanovic has.
No, he's
but Bogdanovic is also like pretty old. He's not that much younger than Fournier.
I think it's because Fournier is balding from both directions. Like Fournier looks like a guy who's bald and is also balding, which is really tough to pull off. The big difference between those two, I think, is if you got good intel that Fournier was going to pick up his player option for next year when, you know, the Raptors don't figure to be a cap team so long as they don't lose Fred anyway.
Yeah.
Well, then you've got another piece for next year that comes off the books in 2021. And maybe it's a little more interesting if you know he's going to opt in.
Yeah. Well, I should just look this up. Fournier is actually younger than Bogdanović.
There you go.
That's wild.
It's the hair, man. That's all it is.
It's just a hair. I mean, I guess also Bogdanović only played 3 years in the NBA.
Yeah.
Because he played so long with Fenerbahce and whatever. But Fournier would be interesting. There's something about it where I don't think Fournier as a playoff contributor is quite there. It reminds me almost like the Lou Williams thing.
Yeah. Can he get played off the floor?
Yeah.
And but if he's the fifth option instead of the number one or two option, yeah, does that look a lot different?
Probably. I think defensively, there's a bit of an issue there, yeah, as we mentioned. But
yeah, because he's not exactly huge or great.
His nickname is really on Basketball Reference, really Don't Google.
Don't ever Google.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
It's not even one of those things where we're trying to be cute. Like, don't do it. Kyle Kuzma.
Nope.
Just a hard no.
I mean, what if they think they're going to get Bogdanović plus assets for Kuzma, what could the Raptors possibly give up?
Yeah, fair enough. There's only room enough for when he blunted his hair, reminded me so much of when everyone blunted his hair. Anyway, we'll move past that. Shout out, Arun. And then the last guy that I think is probably the most interesting, and it's been mentioned a couple of times, not as a report, just like as a deal that might make sense, is Gallinari.
Yeah.
Although, expiring.
Has Oklahoma City played past that, where like they're gonna lock down a playoff spot in the East almost for sure, and like do they look at the chance to get Shea playoff reps as more valuable than what they'd get back for Gallo?
That's interesting.
They played pretty well without him too, though, so
that's what I'm trying to think about, right? Because I think you can, that's one of those situations where they don't care about what seed they're getting into.
No, like, they know they're out in the first round.
Yeah, as long as they get into it and they can get like those like 4 or 5 games,
yeah,
it's not so bad. But Gallinari is interesting, man. I mean, he's always hurt, but I think in terms of just fit, one of the reasons why a couple of these other guys we mentioned don't really work that well is just like it doesn't really make sense for a position of need. It's pretty clear where the Raptors have needs. They need a more offense from their small forward and maybe even power forward positions.
I mean, heck, with how beefy he's gotten, I think he's even played some spot five.
Gallinari?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I can definitely think of lineups that they've run out there where maybe he's logged as the four, but he's
– right.
It's a five out situation.
I mean he's injury prone, but he's productive. Like every single year, he's productive. The last couple of years here, especially since even dating back to 15-16, he's missed a lot of games over that time. But over the span of the last 5 seasons, he's averaged 18.7 points per game, shooting 39% from three. Draws a fair share of free throws as well, 6 free throws a game,
which is not a great strength for the Raptors.
Yeah.
It's improved since the start of the year, but it's still something that in the playoffs I could see being a weakness.
Yeah. And this is where...
the ref conspiracy.
Obviously. Well, yeah. Well, I'm the guy to talk to the brother. No, I'm kidding.
Joe Cash would also be super happy with Gallinari coming
here. Oh, he'd be thrilled, man.
Yeah. Taking him to make gravy in the garage?
No, we're going to see Gallinari at Sugo and stuff like that.
He'd make sense. I just don't know, like...
I think it was something with, like, Ibaka and maybe a first.
Yeah.
Like a protected one.
You better be sure that Boucher is ready to handle playoff minutes, though.
But here's the thing.
Do you want Gasol playing 35 minutes in the playoffs?
Here's the thing. Pascal at center.
There you go.
Also an option. There especially with Gallo playing a little bit more four.
Yeah. OG at center. Whatever.
OG at center.
He's the strongest guy on the team. I don't know why. It's like... It's so funny sometimes when people have suggested like Pascal at center or stuff or like talked about the Raptors small ball lineups. And like I know that OG has looked better when he's nominally the small forward.
Yeah.
But like he's the strongest guy on the team and like other than Mark, probably the best at like if someone's trying to put their shoulder into you, like just standing. You could totally play with OG like functionally the five for minutes here. Keep Pascal on the perimeter or whatever. Oh, Pascal's a little springier at the rim.
And I think
you could do some stuff as well.
One of my hesitations with Pascal center, and this is where to the point where OG can play a little bit there. So it's like he's had to carry such a heavy load offensively that you don't want him wasting his legs boxing out. I don't know who it is, Andre Drummond. Doesn't really make sense to me.
No,
you know.
And the tough part too is like, sure he comes down with those defensive rebounds, and then he can run, he can kickstart the transition game. But yeah, can he be your number one scorer at 40 minutes a game if 10 of those minutes are banging like that?
Yeah. Gallinari is interesting, though.
But this is where zones come in, too.
Sure.
Yeah. The Raptors throw a bunch of those out there.
Yeah.
Although then Pascal's definitely not the center. He's usually the
point guard defensively.
Yeah, he's all over the place. Him and Derek Jones Jr. just mirror images in the zone.
I was going to say, it was brought up. I forgot. I think Zach Lowe brought it up in his pod. But it is interesting to see so many teams around the NBA adopt things that Nick Nurse has done, right? Because the most obvious example of this was Nick Nurse pulled that in just, I won't even say insane defense, but it was incredibly aggressive defense against James Harden when the Rockets were here in Toronto. And the Raptors lost that game. Whatever, it was close. But then on Christmas Day, I was watching that at home. For some reason, there was nothing else to do. And me and my brother were just watching Rockets Warriors because that was what was on. And at first, we thought it was going to be a garbage game. But then I was like, man, the Warriors are defending James Harden exactly like the Raptors were.
Yeah.
And it's like teams around the NBA are really seeing what the Raptors are doing and copying that. I'm seeing box and ones by other teams occasionally.
Yeah. And like the Raptors weren't at the very top of zone usage last year. They were near the top. Miami was a heavy zone usage team, which is not really surprising. Brooklyn. This year, Washington is using it way more than anyone because they can't defend man-to-man. So why wouldn't you try it? Like they're using the zone 3 times as much as the... No, not 3 times as much. 33% more than the next highest team.
Yeah. That's an incredible stat. Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of zone. And they're pretty decent at it relative to like how bad they are defending normally.
Worked against the Celtics last night.
Yeah. Oh, Davis Bertans. Get him on the trade market, even though they're saying he's part of the rebuild.
Yeah. That's classic leverage play right there.
Oh, yeah.
Man,
is this going to be the first... I guess Gallo counts. Just going to say the first year that Raptors fans aren't lusty for a stretch four. But I guess if Gallo's name is going to be on the list.
I'm just saying Gallo will be interesting. Did Masai have Gallo in Denver?
Yeah, he was part of the Melo return.
Right. Anyway, I don't know.
Good trade.
Yeah, definitely. Pretty damn good trade for your first NBA trade as a GM. Foretold many things to come. But anyway, out of all these guys that we mentioned in this list here, I would probably throw my name in. Just maybe the Gallo one's the one that I'm closest to.
Yeah, Bogdan's the guy that I like the most on the list. Yeah. I just like the Kings news that's out there right now is just so muddy that I don't know that like I'd trade Norman a first for Bogdanovic and like risk the RFA. Because you get out of the deal and stuff anyway. But I don't know that that's enough for Sacramento. Like, I don't know if they like Norm enough and if a low first in a bad draft is enough to sweeten it.
So. Yeah. And that's the problem when you're not dealing with rational actors. So
this is the hardest part about analyzing the trade deadline, honestly, is like we always try to come at these things from like a logical perspective and see both sides. But you can't assume that both sides are going to see things. Like, I didn't think DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl on a first was enough for Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, and $5 million?
Yep.
I didn't think that was going to be close at all.
Yeah. I can't get over the fact that San Antonio to throw in $5 million for that. That $5 million should go into, I think, Bobby and Masai, and just the whole front office. They should just split that $5 million somehow. That's just a coup. So moving past the trade deadline, we're going to talk about this great story that you wrote about Donyell Marshall. but first, got to pay the bills. So baseball has hot dogs. Football has nachos. So when does basketball get its official food? How about right now? Kentucky Fried Chicken, the official food of basketball. Think about it. Basketball players make buckets all the time. KFC makes buckets all the time. And theirs are filled with fried chicken, like famous original recipe or crispy popcorn chicken or even juicy tenders. So that settles it. KFC, the official food of basketball. Order at KFC.ca and get it before tip-off. So, Blake, Donyell Marshall. First off,
a lot of buckets that game.
Yeah, 12 threes that game. It's a legendary game for all Raptor fans. First off, why did you decide to do a whole oral history on Donyell Marshall of all people?
Part of the reason was so The Athletic, we do these things called blitzes where like they want a couple markets to do a story with a similar topic at the same time. Like when I did that Jordan Lloyd piece last Christmas, that was part of, we wanted like a big Christmas rollout for Christmas Day games.
Okay, cool.
This one, it's the 40th anniversary season of the three-point shot.
Yeah.
So they wanted some story ideas based around the history of the three.
Yeah.
Because it's also the Raptors' 25th anniversary or 25th season, they've been kind of nudging us to do some historical stuff like the Q&A I did with Chuck Swirsky or look back at the Vince Carter trade.
Right.
You know, stuff that I don't want to do too much of, but if the idea strikes. Yeah. So initially it got pitched to me like, do you want to do something on the Raptors' 3-point record? Like that streak with like Derek Martin.
Shout
and
out Derek Martin, man. Almost got in the fight to preserve that.
The issue with that is that it's now only like the 8th longest of all time, and the Raptors haven't not hit a three in a game since. Like that was the only game.
Yeah.
So it's just like the NBA has outgrown that story. But I was like, you know what? Yeah. One of my favorite games was when the Raptors were bad. Donyell Marshall canning 12 threes, like 9 of them wide open.
I was gonna say when you watch the highlights of this one, which just independent of your story, I watched it like 2 weeks ago before this. like, it just struck me, like, how many times were they going to let him pick and pop open for three? And it was covered extensively in your piece. But for, just before we even get into the quotes and everything like that, just excellent reporting. Talked to a lot of people for it. Where were you when this game happened?
I would have been probably in my dorm room in first year university. So
yeah.
My first year of university was the NHL lockout. I had started to transition from being a hockey guy to, like, more of a basketball guy and, like, an all sports guy anyway.
Right.
So hockey being off my entire freshman year, well, before we go out drinking, we're watching basketball games instead.
Wow.
I also, in my frosh week, someone knocked on my res door and was like, hey, we lived here last year, let me show you something.
Yeah.
And they opened up one of the ceiling tiles and they had cut the cable that went to the common room and spliced it into their room. So I got this room that had cable installed. So I was the only person in the res that had my own cable. So I could watch every Raptors game. Like, this was before League Pass, really.
Yeah.
I could watch every Raptors game on TV and, like,
incredible.
I would, like, that's how I made, like, my first couple of friends at university. It was, like, watching basketball and, like, playing intramural basketball and stuff. So that game was in March of that year, so it would have been, like, pre-exams and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Almost definitely in my dorm room.
Yeah.
With a legal cable.
I also had a – that's a phenomenal story. That really is. I remember watching this game explicitly. It was just very – there's a Swish LA in Etobicoke. And then there might be two, actually. There's two Swish LAs in Etobicoke.
I imagine there are 30 Swish LAs in Etobicoke.
Every restaurant in Etobicoke is a Swish LA. But, yeah, I was at the one that was at Royal York and Bloor with my parents, I think. It was very weird. We never go out to eat. But I remember this game was on, and the Raptors were winning. And Donyar Marshall was in on these threes, especially after the first half. I think he had seven. And I told my parents, like, can we just stay at the restaurant so we watch the rest of the game? Because we didn't have cable. And my parents were like, yeah, whatever. So, like, we just sat at the restaurant the whole night and watched Donyar Marshall hit 12 threes.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Seriously. Anyway, so Donyar Marshall hits 12 threes. First off, this record's significant. First off, it's been broken since.
Yes. A couple times.
Steph hit 13.
Yep.
And then Clay hit 14.
Yeah. And Zach LaVine has since hit 13 also. Obviously, that's not the record.
Right.
It's been top three.
That was this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one where he stole the ball and then he hit the game winner against Charlotte. Incredible game winner, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, the issue, the thing with this story that's so significant is not only as Raptors fans, but Donyar Marshall shared that record with Kobe. Mm-hmm. Kobe had the record for the longest time, and then Donyar joined him, and the two of them, this record stayed intact for a very, very long time.
Yeah, over a decade.
Yeah.
It's like one of the things that Donyar says is, like, he would get asked all the time. Basically, every time Steph got hot, he would get messages and be like, oh, Steph's going to break your record.
Yeah.
And, like, it would be like a running joke, kind of.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was crazy that, like, three-point shooting in the NBA had exploded since then.
Yep.
And no one had touched this.
Yeah.
And, like, what's also crazy about it is, and this is something he says too, is that, like, we remember Clay's 14 three-pointer game as, like, he took what, like 11 dribbles or something like that?
Yeah, Indiana, yeah.
Donyar Marshall might not have taken that many, and he only played 28 minutes. They were all just catch and shoot.
He came off the bench.
Came off the bench for Rafael Araújo.
Raptor basketball, baby.
He definitely could have broken the record, but the Raptors went on a run at the start of the third quarter, so he didn't check back into the game until, like, the end of the third quarter. But the Raptors were on this, like, 30-10 run or something.
Yeah.
So Hoffa stayed in.
Hoffa. Oh, man. This whole thing is a huge blast from the past. That's why I really enjoyed it.
I could not get Hoffa for comment.
I was going to say, what's Hoffa doing?
I tried to get a few other people for comment for the story. So I talked to Donyar Marshall, Rafer Alston, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Milt Palacio, who's not dead.
very much not dead, by the way. That was wild that he got reported that way.
Chuck Swirsky, Leo Routens, and then
Sam
Mitchell, who was the coach, and Kyle Korver, who was a member of the Sixers at that time. My counterpart, Eric Game at The Athletic, spoke to him in Milwaukee about it. Could not get Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, or Chris Bosh. Couldn't get the big names.
Well, but
I don't think they would have many memories. Chris Webber probably has memories of that, but he probably just would have blamed other people for him getting 12 threes banged on him.
You don't want quotes from Chris Webber, man. I've heard enough Chris Webber commentary for a lifetime. But yeah, so excellent reporting. A couple of things really stood out to me from the story, actually, but two of them in particular. One, I think it was, I forgot who it was, but the quote was Jim O'Brien, he was very big on giving up threes and not twos because of the shooting percentage. It was one of those things where it was continuously take away the two and give up the three because the shooting percentage to say that. And this is such like a time capsule because, again, people just didn't understand that threes were more than twos.
Yeah, and that, so the Donyar is the one telling me that.
Right.
the idea basically was like getting a stop is the most important thing. So if you can force lower percentage shots and get the rebound, that's the better way to play. And like Philly was kind of a grinded out team in the like post Iverson MVP era. But yeah, it's crazy. And then like on the other side, Sam Mitchell, that was the year he wanted the team to get up 100 shots every game. Infamously. And like the way that that team played stylistically was ahead of its time. They were third in the league in three-point attempts.
Shot a high percentage, too.
They were like a really modern offense. But Sam Mitchell was basically like, no, that like that had nothing to do with analytics or three is more than two. Like, it was entirely they had nobody who could drive the ball. Like, their only interior offense was Rafer and Chris Bosh pick and rolls. So like they had Bonner and Mopeet and Danielle and those guys to space out. So that's how they built the offense. It wasn't like this this analytic move. It was just we don't have anyone who could score inside the line, so let's get them up.
No, fair enough. But it was also just like I just think that like you would never hear a team ever say that nowadays.
No.
Never. But it was just very much a sign of the times. Like, that was really the style of thinking then. It wasn't even that that controversial. You mentioned throughout the piece that, like, first off, just so many of these shots were open. It's not like it wasn't even like a Klay Thompson situation where when Klay gets hot, first off, even when Klay's not hot, people are defending him. But when Klay gets really hot, then they run him through all these screens and, like, all these, like, quick actions and guys hitting tough shots. None of that happened.
No. They would run a pick and roll in the center of the floor and Danielle would fade to the corner. That's basically it.
Yeah. And you even had a quote there where it was Milt Palacio would run pick and roll and two guys that were like, two guys would go with Milt Palacio.
Because
the
76ers wouldn't change their defense. It's like, this is how we play. This is how we defend the pick and roll. So Milt Palacio is getting two bodies on him and picking out wide open Danielle Marshall. It's insane. Yeah. I really wish I'd been able to get video of the entire game instead of just the YouTube highlights and stuff. But like, it wouldn't load. Synergy goes back that far, but I tried like four times and it wouldn't load for me.
Okay.
And then the Raptors weren't able to like hook up an old copy or anything like that. So.
Word.
But it would have been because I what I wanted to do was look at possessions where he didn't get a shot and did Philly actually do anything to stop him, or was it just, you know, 19 threes is the most Danielle Marshall can take?
Yeah, and also the shot chart looks really funny. Like again, it wouldn't be that out of the ordinary.
His one for the whole year?
No, just his shot chart in this game. But I mean, we can talk about the one for the whole year. It's crazy.
He hit 41.6% of his threes, I think, on almost six attempts a game.
Yeah,
as like a bench big.
It's actually an incredible, like, first, he was incredibly efficient.
You know whose numbers those are really close to?
Who?
Danilo Gallinari's.
There you go.
He was one of the player comps I used in the piece. Of like, yeah, this is a modern shot profile of, like, Danilo Gallinari.
Yeah. And, you know, in this game, obviously, he shot a whole bunch of them perimeter. He only has one make, I think, right at the rim. Maybe he probably slipped to the rim one time.
Yeah, probably.
You know, who knows? But, yeah, it was that quote really stood out to me from Jim O'Brien, just his strategy and his thinking there. It's just so outdated. and it's also just hilarious. I can't believe people didn't figure out that three was more than two. And then also from Rafer Alston, if he was on Danielle Marshall, if he was playing right now, he'd probably be a $180 to $200 million man. At the time, it was unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be a little high. Yeah. But like, he was making like $6, $7 million a year at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He was coming off the bench for freaking Hoffa Arujo. Like, it just, people didn't really understand how useful he was.
Yeah, that level of three-point volume and offensive rebounding from a big now, like, you'd probably be looking at $15 million a year.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's getting a $200 million deal. Like, I don't think he's getting the Kevin Love deal.
No.
But he's getting, like, that's a really valuable asset.
Yeah, you could
maybe even, I don't know, six threes a game at 41.6%. You could play the 4-5 and be pretty good rebounding. Like, you could probably sniff $20 million.
Probably.
Probably 15 is more realistic, but...
That's the only thing with Danielle is that, like, just for his career, he went all over the place. He played for a lot of different teams. Yeah. His numbers are up and down. But, like, honestly, even the year before that, before the three-point record, the 2003-2004 season, which, whatever, kind of a write-off for the Raptors, averaged 16 points per game. Almost 11 rebounds, you know, got over a steal, over a block a game, shot a bunch of threes. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the best players on the team.
Yeah. He was great. He was also an awesome player to have on your team in NBA Live.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's threes. I figured out early, man. I'm not very good at this game, and the computer AI leaves you open for threes more than, like, if you drive to the rim, it's going to be, like, it's going to glitch.
Yeah.
And, like, the ball will fly or your guy will go through another guy or something, so... Just run that pick and pop, man.
That's a fun story that someone should write, especially someone that's played a lot of Raptors video games. or just
like who the best Raptors video game players?
The most unexpected, like, great Raptors video game guys are. Because I got to put in Terrence Ross, 2K15.
Yeah, Terrence Ross.
He was sensational in 2K15.
Really, like, depending on how realistic you run your offense in a video game, like, a guy who hits threes and can dunk is really all you need.
That's it.
I used to kill
J.R. Smith
with,
is the perfect 2K player.
I was going to say Seattle Supersonics Rashard Lewis.
Oh, my God, yeah.
The first 3-and-D kind of slasher guy.
When he still had bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember playing as the Sonics with, like, Nick Collison and, like, right. just, like, yam on people with Rashard Lewis.
Yeah.
This is just drive out of the corner.
So, there you go. I mean, read this Danielle Marshall story. I mean, read everything Blake writes. But I think this one, it was just, especially if you're not even, like, an old Raptors fan, because I don't really consider myself an old Raptors fan. But if you watch the Raptors for more than just, like, this recent decade where they've been phenomenal, it's just a nice, like, time capsule, and it's also just a legendary game. Like, Danielle Marshall's always been a Raptor legend for this. What's Danielle doing nowadays?
He's coaching at, like, Central Connecticut basketball.
Okay.
I forget the exact team name, but Central Connecticut or Connecticut something.
That's
I
cool.
should know that.
That's cool.
Sorry.
No, it's all right, man. So, I mean, you know, shout out Danielle Marshall. He's not even that old, 46 years old. Yeah. Why does he come back to Toronto once in a while?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably because he's coaching at some Connecticut school.
I guess so. They can't all be...
Can't all be JYD.
It can't all be JYD or Mo Pete. Yeah, there you go. So, anyway, Blake, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Read all of his work at The Athletic. Anything else you want to plug?
No.
You got a new podcast coming out?
Me?
Yeah, about music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's already out. It's
I
been
know.
Out for a couple months, called Columbia House Party. We're recording one this weekend with a special guest, which will offer some Raptors crossover. It's not a Raptor. It's just Alex Wong.
Wow.
But that won't be out for... We're like...
What are you guys going to talk about with Alex?
Lil Wayne, Carter 3. I'm not supposed to give those away ahead of time, but
well,
I can't imagine there's a huge overlap audience in our brand new infant music podcast and the Raptors Over Everything podcast.
Maybe, well,
but
maybe,
check it out.
We're starting something right here.
It's been fun. It's not a. Yeah. It was very funny to do. I don't know if you saw on New Year's. I like did the Raptors mixtape. Like
I
asked every player what their favorite albums of the year were.
That was cool.
Yeah, I was mostly just happy that like I had heard of most of what the guys said. There were a couple that I hadn't.
Were there any big surprises from you for the Raptors? I don't know.
Fred being a big R&B guy.
That makes sense to me, though.
Yeah, I didn't
he's
think
old
of it.
School.
It makes a lot of sense now.
And he's
but
booed
when,
up.
When he told me, I was like, that's unexpected.
Yeah.
Because, like, I thought he would, like, put on for, like, the Chicago rap.
Sure, yeah,
a
yeah.
Bit,
maybe and, Mick Jenkins. I love Mick Jenkins, man.
Yeah. Big Crit or whoever, and
sure,
it was just
yeah.
not. It was almost all straight R&B, and like he put me on to Burna Boy, like Serge's.
Okay, yeah,
Serge's favorite African artist.
That makes sense. I was that makes sense. It was either OG or Serge that put Burna Boy.
Yeah,
on
OG was the best person to talk to for that.
I imagine he has very eclectic music taste.
He's mostly hip hop. He just like has strong takes, and like he has a great recall. Like
okay,
he put so much fun at number one, and the rest of a couple of the other rappers were basically like, you can't talk to OG about Young Thug. Like if he says it's the number one album of the year, it's the number one album of the year.
He does seem to stand.
Like Patrick McCaw, like diverted to him. He was like, no, if OG says it, then that's number one.
Okay,
but they'll argue about like Travis Scott album rankings
or
Thug album rankings or whatever. And OG gets like super engaged. It's
yeah.
The next time you need him for something, just get him talking about music.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So
I did ask him what his go-to karaoke song was on Media Day, and he said something about Young Thug.
Yeah.
So
that would be hard to do well at karaoke. I
was going to say, rapping at karaoke is just tough. But also, my most recent memory of this is Alex doing On Time. Always on Time with Ja Rule and J-Lo. I was J-Lo.
I was going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, I was J-Lo.
Yeah.
Which was much easier. J-Lo's versus iconic, but...
I'm a white guy in my 30s, so I have seen far too many people do Forgot About Dre.
Oh, yeah.
The only rapper any white guy can do.
I thought you were going to say Lose Yourself.
Yeah, probably that too.
Probably seen that one as well. So, yeah, listen to your new podcast, man.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's...
Columbia House Party is what it's called.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah. So, as for everything else... rate, review, subscribe to the Raptors Over Everything podcast, especially on iTunes. It definitely helps just surface the podcast and get more people introduced to what we're doing over here. Big thanks to KFC for sponsoring the show. And I'll be back next week with another episode.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.